In this recording, we're going to talk about avoiding problems with compartment syndrome. Now, obviously, compartment syndrome is something that you need to diagnose, above all, in order to avoid a catastrophic problem. So, a couple of things to keep in mind. Obviously, compartment syndrome is something that can lead to irreversible muscle tissue death. So, it is something that, you know, it's a timely thing. It's an issue that you don't want to be finding out once there's already been irreversible tissue death. So, it's very important to make the diagnosis early on. So, how do we do that? Well, you always hear about index of suspicion. So what does that mean? Well, it what it means, or a high index of suspicion, means that you need to be able to put a pattern together and recognize when you should be very, very concerned and like checking that patient. You can't check every patient in the hospital repeatedly over and over again. You have to pick and choose, right? So obviously, the patient who has a fracture, let's say, in the lower leg or in the forearm. I mean, those are the two big ones. A patient who's been found down and has had compression for an undetermined amount of time, presumably a long time. And what makes you even more concerned? Well, it's a patient that you cannot examine well. Why may that be? Well, the patient, for instance, is obtunded. The patient is maybe a psychiatric patient. I would even say a patient who doesn't speak your language very well. You know, so if you think about it, if you can't communicate well enough with a patient in order to know exactly what's going on and that their pain is escalating and you know what's causing pain, or if there's a cultural barrier and maybe they're hiding their pain more than what you're used to seeing, or the reverse, it can make that index of suspicion go up or go down. Intubated patients, by definition, are a higher index of suspicion because they can't talk, right? So, you know, those ICU patients with a tibia fracture, maybe who lost a lot of blood, you have to be very worried about. Splints need to be open, limbs need to be checked. Other patients are patients just like that. So the patient who has potentially lost a lot of blood in the field, you need to be concerned about. And I know a lot of people are nervous or feel like you have to make a clinical diagnosis and you don't check compartment pressure measurements. I don't subscribe to that. I think if there's objective data you can get, you should use it. Don't be afraid of what it shows. If you have a patient which is stone cold fine, patient's awake, you know, there's some swelling, but there's really no concern, then I think you're fine. But if there are questions, and once you start having two or three or four people trying to put their heads together to say, well, does he have it? Does he not have it? I don't know. I think one of my rules is once you start having a lot of discussion about it, you should just get pressure measurements. Okay. Now, it doesn't mean that pressure measurements are the only thing. You still have to put two and two together. Of course, a pressure monitor may not be working properly. Of course, we try to make sure they're calibrated properly and, you know, we don't get errant measurements. But you still have to put everything else together. A couple of other things. You also need to recognize that not all compartment syndromes are the same, right? I mean, anterior compartment syndrome in the lower leg is very common, but you can also get a lateral compartment syndrome that's isolated. You can also get a gluteal compartment syndrome. You know, some of these things may be more likely to be missed because, you know, they're not going to have pain necessarily with movement of the great toe or something like that. So it's really important that you sort of examine the patients, listen to their symptoms, and don't miss these things. And, you know, another thing is when you do diagnose a compartment syndrome, you got to get the patient to the OR immediately. I mean, it's an emergency. It's one of the real orthopedic emergencies that you'll need to deal with. And you will need to potentially bring the patient down yourself, make sure the OR is, you know, ready for you, you know, bump whatever you have to get the patient down. This is not the kind of thing that you sort of sit around and wait for a room and then eventually bring it down. It's an emergency and every minute counts. Obviously, there are medical legal implications with compartment syndrome, so it's not the kind of thing that you really want to delay. So, of course, you know, treatment is surgical. We're really not going to go into that too much here. They can be done with a 2-incision in the lower leg. We do not practice the 1-incision 4-compartment fasciotomy, but that is also a technique in the lower leg. You should be aware of the fasciotomy incisions in the thigh, foot, buttock, forearm. And at least know where to look these up quickly if you're, you know, the chief running in on call and you have to make these, you know, incisions and you don't know where they are. Make sure you're aware. Make sure in the lower leg that you are aware of the superficial peroneal nerve and you don't accidentally lacerate it, cut it with your scissor as you're making your fasciotomy in the distal third of the leg. And always remember the deep posterior compartment. I've seen many people neglect to release this compartment. It is, especially in tibia fractures, it is an area which can lead to you know, permanent problems with your deep flexors, and because it's sometimes missed, left alone, and not released. When you do release it, you can sometimes get into bleeding if you're not careful. So just take some care, go slow, you know, try not to create too much bleeding when you're actually releasing that compartment, but don't neglect to release it. And one last thing, you know, when you're taking these patients back to the OR, you know, for these fasciotomy wound closures and stuff, don't use a tourniquet. I mean, the patient already had some sort of ischemic issue going on, and this goes for anybody who's had some ischemic problem. I mean, we're very liberal with the use of tourniquets in orthopedic surgery, but, you know, traumatized limbs, limbs that have recently been ischemic, think about it. I mean, it's, you don't want to make them more ischemic, and you don't want to get that reperfusion problem, not the cases for tourniquet. All right, well, thanks for listening.